startups teams are too tech-focused on and forget the sales channel.
Welcome to Connecting for Future, your podcast for beyond connectivity. And now, your host, Christian Kösling.
I'm your host, Christian Kösling, and today we are diving into the cutting-edge world of connectivity with one of the brightest minds in tech and telecommunications. Our guest today has been shaping the future of wireless technology for decades and was recently honored by being elected to the National Academy of Engineering, joining the ranks of the top engineering minds in the world. It's my absolute pleasure to welcome Professor Dr. Gerhard Vetwise. Gerhard, before we dive into our conversations today, we'd love to hear in your own words about your background, your journey in the world of wireless technology, and what drives your passion for innovation in connectivity.
Thank you very much. So what I really did is I went into electrical engineering at the time because I just loved mathematics, but mathematics for a purpose. So solving something that really makes sense. And this is what I like a lot about the wireless world or about technology, because there's so much fun, there's so much innovation, there's so much creativity around it. And it's all about thinking of the future, being a little bit, sometimes people call me a futurologist, thinking of the future, thinking of what could be happening somewhere in the future. And then from that, finding out what are the problems that need to be solved to make some kind of a vision happen. And if you take then these problems, they're so tough from a mathematical point of view or whatever kind of creativity point of view, that it is just fun working on them, gnawing on them, and seeing how you can manage to solve them.
Let's look back again on your recent achievement. Can you talk about the National Academy of Engineering?
Yes, I can. So there is the German Academy of Engineering. There's a German Academy of Sciences. I'm a member of both. And now I'm also a member of the U.S. National Academy of Engineering. As far as I know, most likely the only electrical engineer from Germany right now in the U.S. National Academy of Engineering. So pretty special. And it is something really important in the U.S. specifically, but internationally as well. In the U.S., because universities are ranked, and the ranking happens according to how many are in a national academy of a university. So that's why it has a very special twist, and that's why every single student knows about the National Academy of Engineering, even a high school student, high school pupil, because they know, of course, about the university ranking, the college rankings, and they're looking for that. And so that's a very special thing.
Yeah, it's outstanding. I guess in Germany, not everybody knows about it, right? So it's in the U.S., it's pretty famous.
In the U.S., it's way more prominent because of this university ranking impact.
And Gerhard, I'd like to shift gears a bit and talk about something we're excited happening in your home city, Dresden. Vodafone recently opened a new innovation center there. And I understand you're deeply involved. Can you tell us about the vision in shaping the future of connectivity with Dresden?
So we, as the Vodafone chair team of TU Dresden, which we happily are and happily continue to be, have been in very close collaboration with Vodafone because, of course, accepting an endowment like that is fun, but it's even more fun if you search for contact with the partner that is providing you with the funding. And this is what we've been doing for many years. And out of this, a lot of joint strategies, evolution has been happening. We shape the future of wireless jointly, whatever. And then when Vodafone opened the tech center, what is really nice about it is it's really focused on business customers. And we have, in the 5G context, been working a lot with all kinds of different business customers, trying to understand what is the value of 5G for them? Where can it really have an impact, make a difference? And as somebody says, turn the needle. And such that we can make new services happening, new applications working. And we've been playing around with that, now having the tech center there. Now, you know, doing our research projects with these companies and getting the tech center involved and then seeing how we can convert some of these research ideas later on into true products, that's innovation. And that's exactly the idea. And that is so much fun if you see that your ideas make it to market.
And I guess you also have a few startups which you supported in the past, correct?
Yes. So my team has spun out 19 startups so far. I've personally been involved as a co-founder in 14. And doing all kinds of different things. So we have had fabulous semiconductor companies, IP providers, big data analytics companies, network operations, optimization companies, all sort of focused more or less around wireless communication, but covering different aspects of it. Yes, and many of them have been sold in the meantime to big corporates. So that's why you might even hold a product of one of our startups in your hand without knowing it.
Interesting. And if we look within technology, like if you just take 5G, I just got a friend who was in the United States and he was roaming and he had 5G showing in his device and he said it was like being on 2G. So would 5G is not automatically 5G, correct?
It's even worse than that. Okay. In the US, there is sometimes, if you don't watch out, there is a 5GE, which is not 5G, it's 4G. So I have a 4G phone, and when I test that phone, if I take my SIM and put it in the 4G phone and use it in the US, it shows 5G. And I know there's no 5G modem in that. So therefore, that's typical in America. It's very often done that you have something in the display to give the consumer a nicer feeling that they're getting a service there, which is not really quite there yet. So 5GE is nothing but 4G.
Okay.
And therefore, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have the 5G service.
Because automatically people think, hey, 5G, you have like super speed, right? Everything is super, super fast, even in Germany, right? So even you got like 5G standalone, then there's 5G. There's also a difference.
There's also a difference. Absolutely. In the 5G standalone, you have the very low latency, so super fast reaction time, which in many cases is way more important than just the data rate. I mean, that was an idea I came up with in 2009, saying that what would it be if we had a 5G? And then I started thinking. And I came up with this idea, what if we were not only to do more data, but motion control of real and virtual objects? We called it the tactile internet. And it turned out, when after doing the analysis, it very much makes sense. Every millisecond counts. So it's about latency, not only data rate. And if you sort of click on something and you want a quick build up of that, it's not about getting your data 10 seconds later at a super speed, but if you get it like in a millisecond, boom, it starts building up. That's instantaneous. That's immediate. And that is what makes the difference also. So that's why latency counts a lot, not only data rate. And that is 5G SA can deliver that, and 5G NSA, not really.
Ah, okay. And what role will technology like 5G or even 6G play in transforming industries and daily lives?
Let's quickly think back. Mm-hmm. 1G, 2G was voice, telephony. And if we think of it, you as a consumer hardly had a 1G phone, but these big, bulky, analog things that you carry around like little suitcases, they're expensive, use a lot of power. If you look at those big batteries, it was clear they used a lot of power. So they were business phones. 2G was so cool that it was for the consumer. Yes, it was consumer ready. Then came 3G and 4G, both data. 3G was BlackBerry, Nokia Communicator, business customers. And 4G made it really happen for the consumers. Now, if you look at 5G, SA, the tactile internet applications, the ones we see today is flying drones in agriculture, having remote control tractors, having some construction sites doing with remote control. A crane like across here doesn't have a person sitting up there, but it's all remote control from down below. Nobody has to sit up there in that hot little cabin and wait for the day to get over. They used to, I remember, they used to pull up a whole case of beer during,
right.
in the morning and then drink it over the day at the time when I was a kid. Now they don't drink that much anymore on the construction sites. But still, what we see is that all these applications are very much business focused. What we want, of course, is that I want as a consumer not only to put AirPods in my ears, which actually are hearing aids, right? They have microphones, they have speakers, they have everything a hearing aid has as well. So putting a medical device in my ear as a consumer, because I understand this is not for medical reasons, I use it as a consumer service, not as a hearing aid, but really as a new service. And the same thing will happen with wheelchairs. Think of it. You are coming hectically out of a gate at an airport or a train station, and you have it's like 2 kilometers away is my next gate. If there was some little wheelchair where you can sit down, program it, say, go to gate B72, and off you go, and this whizzes you to gate B72, that would be great, wouldn't it?
Right, yeah.
So think of a wheelchair not as a medical aid device, but also as a transportation device. Think of automated driving in the streets. Think of all kinds of applications that will be happening. That all needs 5G. We need this level of connectivity. These devices have to be controlled. They have to see around corners. They have to be whatever, enabled. We don't want to walk around with a walker when we're 80-something plus. We want to just snap on our exoskeleton and jump around like little kids. Up and down stairs, which you can hardly do with a walker, but with exoskeleton you can. But the exoskeleton should keep us from falling down the stairs or falling up the stairs, whatever. So we need this kind of functionality. And for that, 5G is not really ready yet. Because one of the key features that we need in 6G for that to happen is sensing as a service. Because if you think of all these robots, all your VR goggles, whatever, they all need gesture detection for sensing. Your robots need to see the environment around them. Are there objects in the way? Whatever is there. And if we were to put in radar in all this, additionally to the modem, first of all, that occupies a lot of space, and these radar devices are big and bulky. So we want to use the wireless modem, which is emitting data packets, to listen to its own echoes and calculate a radar image. And then the network can deliver sensing as a service. A base station can do that for low air control so that we can fly drones without them bumping into the birds. We have to deal with traffic control of the low airspace. We have to do traffic control of the earthbound space, which is there as well, in buildings, whatever all. And for that, we need this new sensing as a service. So this is a new opportunity for operators. So it's not only data, but it's also sensing as a service. And that we really need because we cannot just do everything camera-based. That is clear. Cameras have no depth vision. I mean, we see all these accidents happening with camera-only based so-called autonomous driving vehicles. That's scary, to put it into my engineering sense, to have cars really driving with cameras only. And we see too many accidents happening, to my way of thinking. And that's why we need this kind of radar sensing. This way we can get depth sensing. And with this depth sensing, we know exactly how far away are objects. Are they moving towards us? Are they moving away? And this kind of service is going to be great because then we can see really personal mobile robotics start booming.
And that's so 6G would be the internet of sensoric.
You could call it that way. But for me, sensing as a service is to make personal mobile robotics happen. That's more how I look at it. And virtual reality happening for consumers.
Okay. What time frame are we speaking about on 6G?
Ha! Terrible question. So currently we have countries pushing for 2018. If it were me, 32. So now we are talking about 28. Not 2018, sorry. 28 is companies are trying to push for that. And I would like to have it 32. Why do I say that? Because if you look at 5G SA, which is really the first 5G low latency network that we have, they've only been live for a year now. And I always say we need 5 years of experience before we start standardizing the next so that we can flush out the mistakes we made. We engineers are humans and we design networks in our best intent, having services in mind. But then in the end, it turns out the volume comes maybe in a complete different service and the network is not really designed for that. Or we overlooked something and actually made a little mistake from day one. Think of 3G. When 3G was designed, it was designed for video telephony at 128 kilobit per second or 384 kilobit per second. If you remember those days, you had these clamshell phones, you opened them up and you had a camera looking at you, not to make selfies. You didn't take selfies at that time. There was no social networking yet.
No influencer.
No. But it was because personal video telephony was going to be the killer app. And the whole network protocol was also designed around video calls. And it didn't happen at all. Instead of that, it was mobile data that happened. And so we had a 3G network that was not optimized for the volume that later happened. Then, of course, video data traffic then took off and became the biggest load in 3G networks. But that was more YouTube kind of video traffic and not voice calls. And that's why it's really important to understand when we design networks, we'll try to look into the future. We try to come up with applications that could be volume applications. But then something else pops up, like a Facebook, like whatever, and suddenly there you are, or a TikTok. And who knows what's going to be sort of in 5 years from now. TikTok might be completely out of business.
Right, yeah.
Because something else has come up. It's so great.
No, right.
That's why it's important for us to learn at least for 5 years with the existing network. And if we think that would be 28, and then we would standardize and implement in 4 years, which is a pretty standard kind of way of doing things, that would be 22.
Okay. So I thought
32. I always
32. 32. I thought it goes faster and faster, right? So you could look it up, right? So like, if you think about 6G or 7G, 8G. So if somebody wants to talk about 7G, that's like something, yeah, it's absolute future, right? So it's
I was put on the spot at the 6G Berlin conference just a couple months ago or weeks ago.
Okay.
And they said, Gerhard, you're Mr. Visionary. Please give us a 3-minute pitch on 7G. So I did. You know me. And my view that I gave there was, think of this, the tactile intern, motion and control. It's all about moving physical objects, but it's not about chemistry. So if we were able to do a spectroscopy, that would lead to the fact that we could not only find out, is there a plastic bag flying in front of our car and the car comes to a full stop, but it is actually not an object where we don't know, is it a human or a plastic bag, but we could detect the plastic. We can detect the paint on the wall. Is it toxic or not? Do we want to walk into this room? Are we allergic to this chemical coming out of the carpet or whatever else? So if you think of that, it's not only trying to understand, can we eat the cookie, or because we're allergic to peanuts, we cannot eat the cookie. But it's also for motion control, of course, to understand, oh, this is a Ming vase. I better stay away from this. And this other thing is just a play ball laying on the floor. And it's okay to bump into it and move on as a robot. Because we will have all these personal mobile robotic helpers and entertainment things and games and whatever all happening. That's my view, at least. And with that in mind, these robots need to know and see things like we humans do. And this is not going to be only possible with radar and images. We also have to feel the stuff.
Right, with AI coming in, right? So as you were just before we started, you had a conference call. And if you look at the camera, right? So like if a camera, for instance, if you could control the camera so that not automatically everybody thinks, yeah, you are Gerhard automatically, right? So you could see everything, but it would just allow you to really identify yourself and then put a little bit more intelligence into those systems, right?
Yes, absolutely. So therefore, yes, it would be very easy to see if somebody's trying to unlock your phone with a picture or with a true face. Because your face chemically is something very different than just a picture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sometimes in the morning, my phone just doesn't recognize me, right? So it's just takes some coffee in order to unlock my phone.
Or in my case, my glasses become sunglasses when I go outside. Ah. They turn dark and then my phone doesn't unlock. So outside, I always have to use the pin.
Right. So we spoke about 7G and but 8G and topic like this, this is just too way in the future, right? So if we want...
That would be way in the future. Right, I mean, right, if it were that TikTok would be continuing to happen, then of course 7G could be like Internet of Chemistry, if you want to call it that way.
Okay.
The Internet of Physics was 5G, 6G, the tactile internet of physical objects, Internet of Chemistry. 7G would be for business customers, 8G for consumers. Who knows? But I mean, that is so futuristic. That's just almost pure speculation.
And what do you see as the biggest challenges in making these technologies in reality?
So think of it this way. If we were really to be able to do this sensing as a service, and we're working on it, and it will happen, what that means is your transmitter is transmitting and at the same time sensing. Now, your mouth that is speaking is quite far away from your ear, and your ear is around the corner for a very good reason. Because if your mouth were right in your ear, you would basically blow your ear apart. You wouldn't be able to listen to anything. But now you can speak and listen simultaneously. So how do we build these transceiver devices, transmitter-receiver devices, we call them transceivers, such that we can emit wireless packets and at the same time receive the echoes without the transmitter shouting so loud, to make it acoustic equivalent, that the receiver doesn't hear anything? That's a huge technical challenge. That's a circuit design challenge, that's a mathematical challenge, that's everything that you can think of. And that's what a lot of researchers are working right now to try to get that happen, make that happen, and get a handle on it. And therefore, it's really interesting to see a technical challenge like that. Another technical challenge is now for we to be able to have a service like automated driving. I would, like from here to the airport, I would buy a network slice that allows me to go travel up to 70 kilometers an hour, and I buy it for half an hour, or whatever it takes me to get to the airport. Now think of the number of seconds that you drive 70 kilometers an hour. They're very few. But your paying the whole time for 70 kilometers per hour service, and the network is reserving packets the whole time for your 70 kilometer per hour service. So now we have to make this whole thing dynamic. Yes. And this was forgotten when we standardized 5G. We want to make this whole thing dynamic. And there are discussions happening in standardization today already on that in preparation of this 6G. So that we actually, when we're standing at the red light, we don't need much control, right? We just need to say blip, we're still alive once per second or something. So that means we could free up a lot of capacity, make this service at least 10x cheaper if we were allowing this kind of dynamic situation awareness. And that will happen as well. So that's how we get the cost down. And then the other thing that we need to really do is reduce the energy consumption big time. Because think of it this way. From 3G to 4G, we almost had a reduction in power consumption of 3x in the network. 4G was much more energy efficient. From 4G to 5G, we're back to square one again. We accidentally did not look too well into reducing the power consumption, to reduce it against by 3x or even more, but at the same time, increasing the data rate from 5G to 6G by 100x, this is what we need to do. We'd increase the data rate of by 10x every 5 years, doubling every 18 months. That means we have to reduce the power consumption per bit by at least 100x. Then we would just keep the networks flat. If we want to reduce it, we need like something like 1000x. So coming up with totally crazy ideas of how we could build super-duper energy-efficient networks is really important.
And looking ahead in the future, how should companies prepare for whatever is coming? Now, just imagine you got like a, you are now the new CEO of a new startup. Is there something you can recommend where you should also put like time, money in, or just?
I mean, it's clear you hardly see a startup exco that doesn't have strong technical expertise. That doesn't mean that there are not pure finance or business people sitting there in the exco of a startup. But a startup, normally a tech startup, is always built around some really strong technical expertise in the executive management team. And if we look at big companies, let's say a Qualcomm, let's say an Nvidia, let's say whoever, yes, still those companies that have drive have a strong technical expertise in their leadership team. So if you want to be a good tech company, you have to have that sort of in your strategy, I think, that technology component. The other thing that you have to have is you have to understand your technology, which hopefully gives you some edge, some 10x edge, hopefully, not a 2x edge. That's one thing I would say right away, then you're doomed. Because if you're only twice as good as your competition, by the time you come out with your product in 3 years, your competition else has improved 2x. So 2x is going to be eaten up by the time until you hit the mark. So you have to be 10x better so that by the time your product is ready to compete, you're still at least 2 times better than the competition. The other thing that you have to do is you have to understand that a lot of startups teams are too tech focused on and forget the sales channel. And the sales channel is multiple ways. So how do I package my product? What are the services around it? What is the hardware, software, whatever service, whatever it is, doesn't really matter. But how do I package the product so that it can fit easily into existing sockets? You know, I mean, when LEDs came out, people were coming up with all kinds of different sockets for LEDs. But when they came up with the E27 or whatever, it's on socket, the normal screw interface, suddenly LED light bulbs took off. Because it fits into an existing socket. So the same thing, you have to fit into sockets, meaning the customer has to say, okay, I designed everything till here, and this I'm ready to outsource, to buy from the outside, to get this service from the outside, to get this piece of hardware from the outside, whatever all. It fits to my interfaces, and it click, 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 falls in place. So there's a strong technical marketing that you really have to make sure that your technology is packaged in a way that it fits in. And then you still need a strong sales, because people always think good products sell on their own.
No, of course not.
Holy moly, they don't. You really have to make sure that, I would say something like 1/3 of your team almost has to be sales in many cases. And people always think 1 or 2 sales guys aren't going to be good enough.
Right. Yeah.
And this is really where a lot of weakness is in many of the companies. And then when you have sold, you're not done. There come recalls. Somebody claims the thing doesn't work. It can be a piece of software, it can be a service that's not good enough, it can be a hardware product, whatever it is. So you have to be ready. And in your business model and your finance model, you have to have enough headroom such that you have factored that in, that you can pay for that. Right. Yeah, think of it, you buy some product with embedded cellular and let's say some goggle or something or a scooter with embedded cellular. Now you say, I'm going to sell this product. And there's another thing, the trailing cost. I have to suddenly sign up with a company like Vodafone for services. I have to host the app. I have to have some hosting. And if I add all of this up, it easily adds up to a couple hundred thousand that I have to pay every year, even if I only started to sell 2-3 of these devices, yes?
Right.
And people also forget that in their plan. So really understanding the full cost of your product in terms of clicking in the right way, having the sales channel, funding the sales channel, the recalls, the maintenance, yes, part of it, and then the additional trailing cost, oof, that's tough.
If I just look within Germany, my feeling is the culture of innovation, right? So we used to come from a smart Germany engineering, right? Building big things and big companies. Nowadays, I don't know if we are still in the game. Like if you look within APEC or to the United States, right? So what kind of culture change do we already need to start in school? If I look at my kids, they are working, I don't know what's it called, the overhead projector, right? So it's, which is really old fashioned. I used to work with it, and now the kids still have things like that. So my feeling is they don't have like a room where they just can engineer or stuff like this, right? So try and error to create a new culture. What do we need to do in order to create this kind of culture?
I think we don't need engineering classes.
Okay.
Engineering classes could be a solution. I don't say, but I just say that must not be the only solution. Denmark has something which I love a lot, and there's a lot of creativity come out of Danish kids for this tiny little country. They have design as a mandatory course. So the kids have to learn to design, create whatever, a lamp, a chair, something. So they learn to be creative. And engineering is all about creativity. You know, you want to create something that doesn't exist today. That's very cool. I mean, for me, it's very cool. I love that. And natural sciences, on the other hand, is very much dominated by people that try to analyze, like Faust. Faust was the typical analytical person. I want to understand the world as is. I don't want to create a new world. I just want to understand the world as is. And this is a very typical way when you study physics, natural sciences, whatever, in Germany. It's very much around that. Now, after World War II, what happened is the creativity part was killed for whatever reason, wiped out. And what remained is the promise of these seemingly non-military natural sciences in the mindset. So the number of people, I don't know how it is today, but a couple years ago still it was that way, that are member of the German Physical Society was at that time way bigger than of the International Physical Society. So everything is about physics, material sciences, chemistry, whatever all in the education, not about physical engineering. Many physicists today work in physical engineering. Many chemists do chemical engineering. Many material scientists do materials engineering. I'm not saying that they don't do engineering. Mm. It's just that it's sort of a dirty thing. Yes. With that, instead of saying this is the creativity part, that's really the fun part, where you're trying to create something new, try to create a new material, try to create something different that allows you to create complete new concepts of physics, whatever. The creativity part should be more dominant. And if you think of your school and your high school, I went to school in Germany. It's all very analytical. Improve quality, yes, Spaltmaß mentality, I sometimes call it. This means this was the former VW CEO. He was all about how small is the creek between the door and the car. And I kind of make this perfect line so that the metal is perfect. It makes your car a little less noisy because the wind flow is better, yes. But that's about it. Hardly noticeable. And it makes it more beautiful, yes. Maybe that. But it doesn't make your car like orders of magnitude more fuel economic. And therefore, what we really see is a mentality that has been put in the brains of people that the engineers built the weapons of World War II. So after World War II, you see that in a lot that engineering in Germany of that kind, innovative engineering, was not really big, but it was more improving on the existing quality and just copying from the others. And this mentality still is much in the heads today. And I think, personally, I mean, this is my I don't have any proof. This is just my personal view that this impact of wiping out the innovation, the creativity part that dominated even physics before World War II, think of the number of Nobel Prizes that Germany won. Mm-hmm. That's all innovation. That part is gone. And think of the number of Nobel Prizes in physics that Germany has won thereafter, almost zero. Now it's starting back to trickle back again. So it's that is really a big part. And it would be great to come up with something in courses, even in elementary school already, to have this creativity become really a part of the culture, back into the heads of people, that creativity is great. It's not all terrible for some dictator to use in a bad way, but that it's really fun. And so that's why I see that as the biggest challenge.
Okay. Gerd, I also want to have a few quickfire questions. Are you ready?
Let's give it a try.
Which book can you recommend for everybody?
The Innovator's Dilemma.
What car are you driving?
I drive a BMW.
E4?
No, it's a diesel.
Okay.
But actually, I hardly drive the car. I normally drive my electric scooter.
What kind of hobbies do you have, if you still have time for hobbies?
I bicycle ride, I swim, I ski, I do mountaineering.
Great. Well, this is really interesting to get to know you better. But last but not least, if you want to give recommendation for future leaders, as we always wrap it up like giving advice for future leaders, what kind of advice can you give for future leaders in companies?
Love your employees. Really love your employees. Build a story that you love so that you're so passionate that you don't even need to think about it. It's like automatic there. So that together with your team, you make this vision happen.
Gerd, your insights into the future of connectivity and your vision for the internet of sensoric have given us a lot of to think about. Thank you so much for joining us today. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to the episode of Connecting for Future. Stay tuned for more conversations with the leaders who are shaping our connected world. Until next time, keep innovating and keep connecting. Thank you, Gerd.
Thank you very much.